You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Labor Day. Thank you for joining us at the special time, 7 p.m. on Labor Day. I hope you've had a wonderful weekend. And, of course, we are here with all of our friends. My lovely co-host, Paula Lazon-Osman, is with us today, live from Boston. How are you today, Paula?
Doing pretty good, Tom. How are you?
Good, good. And did you have a good Labor Day weekend?
Yes, it was very nice. How about yourself?
Awesome. Yeah, well, I'll tell you about that in a second. But also joining us is Dick Birnbach and his lovely wife. Ann. Yes, I know. Gosh, it's been a long day. I left at about, let's see, when would that have been? About 6 a.m. local time, although I was up about 4 a.m. local time, because I was in Madrid. That's where my Labor Day weekend was. And so I've been flying an airplane all day, and then I just drove home, got home about 30 minutes ago. But, Dick, Ann, how was your Labor Day weekend? Did you do any barbecuing?
No, we didn't. Actually, I was working. I was out working on the lawn, and I did all my trimming and stuff, and then my wonderful wife cut the grass for me.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, she's got a riding lawnmower.
Oh, okay, riding lawnmower. Boy, I was envisioning Ann pushing one of those, you know, hand mowers. And that's, you know, when I met my wife, Nancy, that's all she had. She had a very small yard, but she just had a push mower, and not even a, you know, motorized one, just a push mower. So
Tom,
to give her
to
a break, I actually hired.
Here.
Yeah. Well, you've got a big yard.
Straight.
In fact, you've got a very big yard. I wouldn't even come close to doing – my yard's – nowhere near the size of yours, and I hire somebody to come do all of my yard stuff. But I'm just gone too much. So that's the thing. But listen, we've got a special guest here today, Chris Ann Hall, who's famous for being fired for teaching the Constitution. She's online with us. Let's bring her on, and I'll let you introduce yourself. Now, Chris, I understand that you recently got a settlement on this whole brouhaha, and I don't know if you're going to be allowed to tell us anything about it, but if you can, let the people know kind of what happened and what the result has been.
Well, I was put in a situation where I had to choose between my paycheck and my constitutional rights, and my husband and I prayed about it and made the decision that constitutional rights and the constitutional rights of my son are more important than anything. After all, you know, our founding fathers pledged their lives, their fortunes, and sacred honor for that. So I don't think anything less should come from us. And so we made that decision to take the stand for the Constitution. And the federal lawsuit was filed, and we did settle. And we're very, very happy with the settlement. And that's all I can really say.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. Now, can you tell us why, though, your boss didn't like you going out teaching the Constitution?
Well, I don't have to tell you. He said it in emails, said that he didn't want me speaking to right-wing fringe groups.
Yeah, that's right. That's right-wing fringe groups that this is what always kills me, whether it's a liberal or a moderate or whoever they think they are, that thinks that people that believe in the Constitution are a fringe group. I mean, that just blows my mind away that anybody could even think that. And that's kind of like saying anybody that believes in the Bible is a fringe group. Actually, a lot of liberals think that. If you believe in the Bible, you're a fringe group. The reality is that this, all those people on the left, they're the fringe group. They're the minority, too. And that's how we need to educate people and get the word out. They're the minority. They are the squeaky wheel many times, and that's why we hear their baloney all the time. But, well, now, let me ask you this. How long did it – well, let me back up a second. What I really wanted to ask you is, does your boss not work for the new Attorney General, Pam Bondi?
No. State attorneys in the state of Florida don't work for anybody.
Oh.
They are elected officials, and they don't work for anybody. They work
so,
for the
so
people.
He was elected for the particular county that he was overseeing?
The circuit, yes.
Okay. So he doesn't work for anybody other than the voters?
Right.
Now, do you think there's any chance the voters are going to rally to get rid of this guy, this creep?
I think he's got a very very slim chance of winning in 2012.
Excellent, excellent. All right. I don't have anything against lawyers, but slime balls like that, yeah, he needs to go back to chasing ambulances and, you know, slip victims and that kind of stuff.
Can I put in something here, Tom?
Yes, please do, Dick.
First of all, I'm very happy, Chris, that you did take it to court and that you got a settlement in your favor. However, I don't feel the courts take things far enough. Now, obviously, they feel that your rights were violated. Your rights were violated by a man that is supposed to uphold the Constitution. I think the courts should have removed him from office for violating said Constitution.
You know, even if we had taken this to jury trial all the way and got a verdict in our favor, the court wouldn't have been able to do that. They don't have the jurisdiction to remove him from office. The only person that has the jurisdiction to remove him from office is the governor, and they've got some pretty strict criteria for that, and it's got to rise to the level of malfeasance. Now,
Could the court not send the governor a letter saying, based on this, we feel that he should be removed from office, we would like an investigation?
I don't really know that they could, actually, because it wouldn't have been a matter that was before them.
Yeah, typically they won't do that, Dick, but here's the case. Even if they could and would, now the governor would have to open up an investigation and essentially file a claim, or not so much a claim, but file charges, and it's very, very difficult getting rid of judges in this country, both at the local, state, and especially federal level. I mean, at the federal level, I know enough about that. You got to impeach them. And impeaching somebody is very, very difficult, and it becomes a costly process. And typically, in this day and age, nobody's going to want to spend the money to do that, even if he deserves it. So that's why I was curious to ask if he worked for...
And especially with the elections coming up here in 2012, I don't think that they would take the time to do that. They would just let the people take care of it.
Yeah, it's too bad that we can't do something about that. And one of the things that we have a significant problem with, and at least he's an elected official, whereas our federal circuit court judges and, of course, our Supreme Court, they're appointed and they can stay there as long as they want. Nobody can get rid of them, even the person that appoints them. So that's a real issue that we...
Well, in Florida, we do vote to keep our DCA judges and our Supreme Court judges. The problem is that... Nobody informs themselves enough on the judges to know whether they should vote them out or not.
Well, and it's difficult. You would really have to just simply look at their rulings, because they can't campaign like those of us that have campaigned for an office, because they can't make political statements. They have to be careful in what they say, because it may prejudice future cases and on and on. So it's kind of like, hey, getting endorsements. Gee, this guy's a really great guy. I know him. He's a great guy. But you're right, and it makes put more burden on the voters to have to go out and review the judge's rulings to determine what kind of judge he is. But if they've not served as a judge before, then you have no idea how they're going to rule, and they can't even talk about how they're going to rule on potential cases and that kind of thing. So it really is a tough situation.
I have a theory about that, actually.
Uh-huh.
I have a theory that system exists the way it does is because nobody wants to change it. Because if you don't know anything about a judge, then you don't know whether they should stay or go. And the way the elections are set up, if you don't know anything about them, then they stay. That's the way people vote. Well, I don't know anything about them, so we must be doing all right, so they vote to keep them.
If we started with
a campaign that said, when in doubt, vote them out, and we started voting people out as a regular practice rather than keeping them, then we would find out a whole lot more about what they're doing, because people would want us to know what they were doing so they could stay on the bench.
Yeah. Oh, boy. That's for sure. Well, listen, Chris, you've got a website, chrisannhall.com. It's spelled chrisannehall.com, chrisannhall.com. And you've got some great articles on there that you've written about the Constitution and other issues. The latest one, you talk about term limits and the need for term limits and why we already had term limits that our founders gave us, and yet we've squandered that. So is there anything else, anywhere else people can find out information about you or should go? And you wrote a book. Tell us about your book.
Well, My book is called It's Not a Living, Not a Living, Breathing Document, Reclaiming Our Constitution. And what I do is I lay out a factual and historical proof of why it is not a reasonable alternate way, that the living, breathing document theory is a lie, and it is not a reasonable alternate way to interpret the Constitution. I feel like the progressives and the liberals have sort of brainwashed the country into believing that there are two ways to interpret the Constitution, and how you do it is a matter of opinion. You do it either by, you know, the original intent of what the founders meant, or you do it in this living, breathing way, in that it doesn't matter what our founders said. It only matters what the words mean now and how we want to apply them now. And my book lays out the factual and historical basis for why there is only one way to interpret the Constitution, and that we should stop perpetuating that lie.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. I mean, really, when I talk with liberals and I ask them, you know, if it's a living, breathing document, then we can change it willy-nilly anytime we want, which means there really is no rule of law. So what document is there to actually protect us when the government does something we don't like? Because usually
they don't want that.
Right, yeah. So I tell them, and I come up with scenarios. I tell them, how about this scenario? This is something I know you wouldn't like, and it does violate the Constitution. What are you going to do about it? Well, they don't have an answer. So they're willing to bet that most of the violations that occur about the Constitution are going to benefit them as liberals. But one day it's going to change, and it will not benefit them, and they will be screwed. And so when we reach that point of the discussion, their answer is, well, we'll vote them out of office. And I say to them, let's see, if they're willing to violate the Constitution to the point where even you as a liberal are upset, is there any reason why they won't suspend elections? Oh, they can't do that. They won't do that. Let's see, every government in the history of time at some point has suspended elections. So tell me again that that'll never happen? So they never have good answers. And what they really finally boil down to is, well, we'll revolt. Yeah, look at the revolutions going on around the world right now. You're willing to just wait until things get so bad that we have a bloody revolution, like our first revolution, and lose lots of lives. That's your solution? I mean, it's crazy. They're deluded, these liberals. I refer to them as libtards because they're really not too bright, and they never have any real good solutions. But it sounds like a fantastic book, and, of course, people need to go and take a look at your website, at some of your articles there. And
I've also written a workshop that teaches the Bill of Rights, the history of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, 1 through 10, and I also talk about the 17th Amendment. And that's what I've been doing, is traveling around the country teaching that seminar. And
wow.
I've been going to groups. I just got back from New York yesterday, and I had a great time. I had the honor of giving a speech out in front of the Statue of Liberty. It was so exciting. I could hardly get over it. And
that's cool.
So that was, yeah, oh my goodness, it was so amazing. I'd never seen the Statue of Liberty before, but it was just an amazing thing. And so,
beautiful lady.
Yes. May I interject something here? I have your book right in front of me, Chris Ann, and I wanted to tell anybody that's listening, it's absolutely fantastic. I couldn't put it down.
Thank you so
much. It was very easy to read.
Yes, very easy.
And it's very clear, absolutely, by the time you finish reading it, that it is not a living, breathing document, never has been. You prove that, and your seminar that we saw up in Milton, Florida, was absolutely fantastic. Anybody that's listening, you have to come and see Chris Ann. That was Deland. I'm sorry. So
right, yeah. Well, we are going to be doing the entire seminar in Winter Haven on November 12th. And then anybody, and I don't know who your listening audience is, but we have another entire seminar scheduled for October 8th in Steinhatchee, Florida, at Friendship Baptist Church. And I just, you know, I want to appreciate pastors like the pastor of Friendship Baptist and others that have invited me in to teach, because the churches have an obligation to protect liberty. If you really believe that God gave us this country and God gave us liberty, then the Christians of all people should understand that they're going to have to stand and face God for what they've done to defend liberty. And so there's a lot of pastors that don't let me, that I'm not welcome in their church because they're afraid of 501c3 issues. And I don't violate anybody's 501c3 status. I couldn't anyway because I'm a visitor. I'm not a pastor. And they're afraid of offending their flock so that they lose tithe money. So, I think that it's exceptional when we find pastors that will actually let me come in. And then I would like to, you have somebody there from Boston, and I would welcome any group calling me in the United States to come and visit them and teach. And I don't have a speaking fee. I don't charge anything. I just ask for people to pass the hat and help me get to where I'm going. Then I sell the books and the DVD, and that helps me fund everything. This really, really has been a calling for my family. This has been a ministry that we've picked up because, like I told you, we believe that our founding fathers gave their lives, their fortune, their sacred honor for us to have liberty so that we could live in the prosperity that we have. And this is the call of our generation today. The sacrifice is not, of your life is not to pick up your musket. I hope not anyway, but the sacrifice of our life now is to do things like I'm doing. It's just you give up your time and sacrifice your time and do what you can to get this nation back to where we're supposed to be. See, we don't have to reinvent anything. We don't have to change anything. We don't have to make anything new. Our founding fathers gave us a foolproof plan, and we strayed so far from it that we need to get back to where we started from.
Wow. Well, that's great. Tell us one more time where you're going to be in October. I don't know if it was just me, but it sounded like your phone was breaking up just a little bit.
Okay.
So even
I'll
just for me.
October 8th, I'll be in Steinhatchee, Florida, at Friendship Baptist Church. And Steinhatchee is on the Gulf Coast.
Okay. Awesome. Well, that's great that you're getting to travel around and talk about this. Here's one thing you might tell people if they're hesitant about bringing you in any of these churches. A good friend of mine told me this back when I was campaigning. He said, Tom, you might want to use this. He said, the Constitution is not left or right. It's just what it is. It's the law. It's the law of the land. It's the foundation, the basis for our country and our government. And it's not left or right. It's it. So nobody can say when the lefties would like to portray the Tea Party as being extremists because they simply want to follow the Constitution and the intent of our founders, that's the extreme view. It's those of us on the right that want to follow the Constitution, we're following something that's not left or right. So that was my good friend Mark Vance in Melbourne. I'll give him credit for that, but he's absolutely right. It's not left or right. It's not liberal or progressive or conservative. It's just what it is. So it can't be considered, teaching the Constitution can't be considered, as a political motivation. It's the law of the land, and there's nothing wrong with learning our laws and traditions in a better way. Now, here's something, Chris. Since you are a lawyer, and you teach the Constitution, and you know it inside out, and you also know a lot about the history of our founders, and you make the point of saying that it's not just enough to know the Constitution, but you got to learn about our founders and what they believed in, and their intent.
Right.
And there's how you can find out their intent. Recently, a circuit court, a panel of three judges, ruled that Obamacare was unconstitutional, and the Clinton appointee was the dissenting vote. Now, in his dissent, here's what he said. He said that under the Commerce Clause, Congress's power has grown over the last two centuries astronomically. Now, first of all, I'd like to ask you, what enumeration of power in the Constitution gives one branch the authority to grow the power and authority and scope of another branch?
No, there isn't.
No, there's nothing. And I don't mean to be doing trick questions or anything, because I haven't seen anything about this in the media. And what this gentleman has essentially admitted is that the judiciary, but see, he didn't say, what he should have said is, we, the judiciary, have grown astronomically the power of the legislative branch over the last two centuries, but there is no enumerated power for them to do that. So what the rulings have done, go ahead.
What the real problem is here is that the founding fathers, this was a really huge debate among the founding fathers, the separation of powers issue,
right.
Because they had models to go after. Virginia, for instance, Thomas Jefferson's state, their separation of powers was complete and distinct. There was no overlap whatsoever, and the three branches could never do anything that would ever impede on the other or instruct on the other or even control the other.
Right.
But the other states followed a platform that had been set out by a man named Montesquieu, in which that the powers were separate and distinct, but with blending for purposes of control, for making sure that they didn't usurp each other's powers. And that's what we finally ended up with, was distinct branches, but the blending that we have was established only to keep them from stealing each other's power.
Right.
So, yes, the judiciary has advanced or increased the Commerce Clause power of Congress, but not so much that they've increased it, but they've allowed, they've done it not by action, but by from omission. You see, it's the judiciary's responsibility through the blending of the powers that our founding fathers set. For these, the blending of the powers is what we know as a checks and balance.
Right.
And it was their obligation through this check and balance to stop them from doing that.
Right.
So yes, they did. They did grow it, but it was Congress who took the step first, and took a power that they didn't have.
Right.
Which brought us even closer to tyranny. And when we did that, which it is tyranny, and then when we do that, it was the judiciary's responsibility at that point, from the founders' perspective, in the check and balance that they set up, for them to say, no, you cannot do that. They failed to do that, and so tyranny won.
Yes, exactly. So one of the things I've talked about, I'm not huge on amendments, but I think term limits, and you talk about term limits, and that we don't necessarily need an amendment, but if we do go down that path, I'd like to see something put in there about the judiciary in its rulings, in its constitutional rulings, cannot either grow the power of another branch or diminish its power. So in other words, things have to stay neutral. Because the truth is, we have a process for growing the power if we the people, see, it's we the people that the government represents and is in power because of us. There is a process for growing the power of one branch or the other if we so choose, and it's called the amendment process. And so if the judiciary were to rule on the Commerce Clause and say, well, we'd like to see Congress have the authority to do this, but that would increase its power over the precedent that has been set up to this day. Therefore, what we will rule is, no, they do not have that power currently. An amendment would be necessary, and that would be it.
But we don't need an amendment because
right.
we already have one. It's called the Ninth Amendment. The Ninth Amendment says the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And that exactly is what you're talking about. This right that Congress is taking over, these rights of the people to engage in free commerce, is a right that belongs to the people. And just because it's not specifically listed as an amendment in the Constitution, the Ninth Amendment says it still belongs to the people. And
yes.
that we don't need another amendment, and that's why we need to learn the Constitution so we know what we have. And I do want to make something clear for the people who haven't read my blog on term limits. I'm not in favor of term limits as they have been proposed in many places. I'm in favor of term limits in that we repeal the 17th Amendment and put our senators back on automatic recall and re-invoke the greatest term limit that's ever been given to the people.
Well, we did a whole show on that, well, not a whole show, but a good portion of a show several months ago about the 17th Amendment. And there are people that believe it wouldn't make a difference this day and all that kind of stuff. But I asked the question, who does the Senate represent? When you have a majority of states that are opposed to Obamacare and are either filing lawsuit or altering their own constitutions or writing laws to inhibit it and mitigate it, if a majority of states are against it, but the majority of the Senate passed it, then they don't represent the people. They don't represent the states. So who do they represent? I believe that our Senate today represents the federal government. And that
is a big problem.
They represent
special interest groups and themselves. When you talked about the 17th Amendment, did you talk about what Richard Henry Lee said about it?
No, I did not.
Okay. Richard Henry Lee said, one of his letters from a federal farmer, this is it is interested combinations and factions we are to particularly guard against in the federal government. He said right then and there, it was debating over how to create the government. It's the interested combinations and factions. That's special interest groups, lobbyists, right?
Yes.
And all rational means that can be put into the hands of people to prevent them ought to be provided and furnished for them. Where there is a power to recall, trustee sentinels among the people or in the state legislatures will have a fair opportunity to become useful. And further, the circumstance of such a power being lodged into the constituents will tend to continually keep their watchfulness as well as their attention and dependence on the federal senators and representatives. So what he was saying was, if we want to keep the special interest groups, if we want to keep the lobbyists from having control, what we have to do is give the people the power to automatically recall. Because what happens then is, let me put it on a practical term. If you know your boss is looking over your shoulder and watching everything that you do every day, you're going to make sure that you're listening to your instructions of your boss and doing everything that your boss wants you to do. You're going to be very conscious of your boss watching you. And in the same respect, if your boss knows he has a responsibility to watch you and that he has to make sure you're doing your job and he has to automatically fire you if you're not, he's going to be watching you at all times. And that's why our founding fathers set up this automatic recall, because they knew that the people, in order to have a secure Republican government, they had to be eternally vigilant. Remember, liberty is the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. They have to be eternally vigilant. They have to be constantly watching what's going on in D.C. And since they have the power to recall automatically, the senators will know that they're constantly being watched and will be constantly aware of what the people want them to do. And so I don't know how anybody could possibly think that that would not work. But you would immediately remove the power from the special interest groups and from the lobbyists if the people had the power to bring their senators home.
Yes. And, of course, the states had that power before the 17th Amendment, but they didn't really like having it, and they found that they were becoming too corrupt because the lobbyists would just go to them and work through them, and it was a big problem. So they passed the buck, really. That's why we have the popular election of the Senate now, is the state legislatures passed the buck. They couldn't take the heat.
Well, it was also a pressure by the progressives of 1913, led by Teddy Roosevelt, who brought this big campaign forward that said, well, it's just too inconvenient to have this automatic recall, because then you have periods of time where there are empty seats, and really what they did was use the same tactics that they use today and talk about this inconvenience, empty seats, and how it could interfere with the workings of the government. But if you look at the time, and there's people that have actually done this research, that the majority, if not the majority, the most of the absences happened when the senators were out of session. So it never really interfered with any voting process.
Right.
But this was one of those, what I have classified as a pernicious design to subvert liberty by the progressives, all the way back to the progressives in 1912.
Yes. Well, they've been doing that a long time. And I'm going to give you one little snippet that you may or may not have seen, and the only place I've seen it is in Henry Adams' book, and I know Paul is tired of hearing me say this, but Henry Adams, in talking about the judiciary, when the founders were still alive, who you could actually go to and say, so what was your intent, had no intention of following their intent. They had the power to do what they wanted and to see what they wanted to be done, and they did it. And we're talking in the late 1700s, 1795 to 1800. The Supreme Court was already on an activist path and didn't care what the founders intended, even though they could.
Right.
I mean, you are an attorney. Don't you think if there was a law in the book and the legislature that wrote that law was still there and you could actually call them and say, what did you guys actually mean by this? I mean, what was the intent? Don't you think that would be a reasonable and prudent thing to do? But the Supreme Court back then just didn't care. And that was the beginning of our history. They were already activists. So,
well, you know, there was a very big debate over that. Alexander Hamilton did not trust the courts. And in my book, well, the study that I give, the workshop that I give, shows that one of the greatest tools that is used in history, throughout history, against liberty of the people is the judiciary. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting to see how the judiciary is used against the people. And Alexander Hamilton was very, very suspicious of the courts and made most of his arguments in the Constitution with the perspective that he was trying to protect the people from the courts.
Yeah. Well, Jefferson in his second term tried to push term limits for the judiciary, but he had lost a lot of his base and power by the second term. He could have done it in the first term, but, of course, we know that the Union was still very fragile. So he felt like he had such popularity and control, he didn't have to worry about it. But then as he started to worry about it, his power was slipping. And then over the course of his life, he makes references to it right up until, I think, about 4 years before he passed at the age of 80, and said, you've got to do something about the judiciary. It's going to destroy this nation. And we can see the path it's taken us down. So, well, it sounds like you've written a fantastic book. And tell us one more time where you're going to be in October, because there are lots of people in Florida. We have a lot of listenership in Central Florida, so that's a little bit from the Gulf Coast. But now, tell us again where you're going to be on the 8th of October, and then tell us where you're going to be next anywhere in Central Florida.
Well, I am going to be in, I'll be in Steinhatchee, Florida on October 8th at Friendship Baptist Church. I will be in Lakeland, Winter Haven area on November 12th doing the entire seminar. On November 4th and 5th, I will be at the Florida's first annual Tea Party Conference. In Daytona Beach. Yes, I'll be a speaker there, and I'll be doing at least one breakout session there that I'm aware of. And people can go to my calendar. If you go to my website and look at my Google Calendar, it's posted. You can see where I am. I'm going to be in Tallahassee on Tuesday, and I'm going to be somewhere on Thursday, but I can't remember right off the top of my head.
Well, let's just pull your calendar up and see. Now, we're going to be broadcasting from that Tea Party convention, the 4th, 5th, and 6th. And, of course, we'll look for you there. And, again, we'll remind people as we get closer about who is going to be there. Let's see. You said this month on the 5th, did you say? Or what was the date you just gave me of someplace you were going to be?
Tomorrow I will be in Tallahassee.
That's right. And then on Thursday, St. Lucie Genesis Community Church, St. Lucie County 912 group. Excellent. So, well, perfect. Now, we'll remind people, chrisannhall.com, and if you're wondering what that Tea Party convention, we're pushing that. If you go to our website, usaradionetwork.com, you'll see the banner for that. It's the state convention, Daytona Beach, Florida. You can click on that link. It will take you to the website, which is TT, as in Tom, Papa November Charlie, ttpnc.com, and you can find out all about it. I'm looking at the website now. They've updated it. It's got Rick Scott speaking, Marco Rubio, Alan West, Lloyd Marcus, of course, and he was just on the show about a week ago. And, of course, you, Chris Ann Hall, are going to be there.
Lloyd is a good friend. I like Lloyd. He's a good guy.
Yes, he is. He is pretty awesome. So there's a lot of stuff, and I know that they told me last week that Herman Cain had committed to coming to the presidential debate. I imagine that most of the senatorial candidates will be there, so that could be very good. So they've got their schedule events there, and it's at the convention center with the Hilton right across the street. You can still get rooms there for $99 a night, which is a pretty good deal at that Hilton. And so I'd encourage people to come. Chris Ann, is there anything else we should tell people about what you're doing, what's going on? Well, you know what? I had one other question. Then I'll see if Dick or Ann has a question, and then Paula.
I've got a question.
Okay. Here's my question. As you're going around and teaching the Constitution, is there anything that stands out in your mind that either surprised you or didn't surprise you, but it's consistent, like people going, wow, I had no idea about this particular thing, or my goodness, well, why then is the government doing this? I mean, is there anything that has jumped out at you that stood out as you're going around teaching the Constitution?
I can tell you consistently
that people are not aware of the history of the 700 years of history that went into the birth of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. Nobody has taught this history, and nobody has taken the time to connect the dots the way I have, the way I do in the book, to show how important it is, this history, to our very Constitution. I teach history that hasn't been taught in generations. I mean, I've taught people from 7 to 87 who have told me I've never heard this history before, and I teach just the introduction, which is just the history part. And every single person will tell me they've learned something and they never heard this stuff before, because there's so much. There literally is 700 years of documentation that has gone into the birth of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, and that is the history that we've been robbed of. The fact that every time people throughout history have stood for liberty, they've won every single time. And every single time they stand for liberty and win, they get greater protections for liberty for the people. And I believe that's, again, I use those words, malignant and pernicious design. Those are the words of our fathers, not our founding fathers, but their fathers. That those who hate liberty work in a designed way to keep it from the people. And part of that is robbing history. Patrick Henry said, "I have no way. There is no way to tell the future, but by the past." And our founding fathers were not winging it when they made our Constitution. They didn't have a grand novel idea. They had learned from history, and they had used that lamp of history to light the future so they could see the things that they wanted to protect us against. And consistently, that's the thing that people say, "I just never knew that."
Yeah, amazing. All right, Dick, letter fire.
Okay, this is going to be a couple of questions here for you, Chrisanne.
Okay. Can you give me one?
Our Constitution is basically the law of our land.
Right.
It directs our
supreme thought. It is the supreme law of the land.
Okay. Constantly, we see our elected people violating the law of the land. And it appears the only recourse we have is to vote them out of office. So what good is the law of the land if this is the only recourse we've got? They can violate this law, and nothing happens to them. So is it really law? Now, I'm a retired police officer, and I understand some laws, and when you violate laws at the county, state level, or whatever, there are penalties.
Let me start with a little bit of history, okay?
Okay.
In 1100 England, now there's more history that I teach about this, and the lady that said she heard me teach has probably already heard this, so she knows where I'm going with this. But in 1100 England, Henry I had to sign a document in order for the people to accept him as king. He signed the 1100 Charter of Liberties. And what he said was, "I, Henry, by the grace of God, having been crowned King of England, will end all evil practices that have been oppressive presence in England." He promised that the king before, no, recognizing that the king before him had engaged in evil practices and had been oppressive to the people, even though the king before him was were his brother and his father, he said he was going to end this. And one of the provisions that he said he was going to end was, "If any of my baron commit a crime, he shall not be bound. He shall not bind himself to the crown with a payment, as was done in the time of my father and my brother, but shall stand for the crime as was custom and law, and make amends as are appropriate." So all the way back to 1100 England, it was considered evil and oppressive for men who made the laws to not be held accountable for the laws. So I tell you that to illustrate to you that it's been almost a thousand years now, and the people who engage in corrupt tyranny are still doing the same things. The government, the people, are not a reflection of their government. The government is a reflection of the people. And I can tell you that the problem with the leaders, I don't call them leaders anymore, because they're not leaders. They're just elected to do a job. Leaders is a character trait, and not many people have that anymore. But these elected people who are ignoring the law is a symptom to a greater disease. The greater disease is the fact that we don't know the Constitution anymore. Fred Lewis, who is a Supreme Court justice in the state of Florida, took a poll of the people in Florida and asked them to name all five protections listed in the First Amendment. There are five distinct protections in the First Amendment. When he took this poll, only 2% of the people polled could name all five protections. And so it's great for us to have rights. But how do you know what they? How do you know that they're being trampled on? How do you know you deserve to have them protected if you don't even know what they are? So the greater disease that we have here is not the corruption of the leaders, but the ignorance of the people. And I don't say that in a you know demeaning way. It's a factual thing that we don't know our Constitution anymore. The other symptom that we have is the fact that we don't take the time to know who these people are. You know, we are so caught up in this cult of personality. We treat these people that we elect like celebrities. We allow media to fool us into thinking these people are celebrities. We give them limelight. They don't do their job, and we give them a pass. And so we look for people that look pretty in the camera and talk well. We don't look about moral characters anymore. Sam Adams made the statement that that virtue in private matters is directly related to virtue in political matters. He said if you have a man who is unfaithful to his wife, it will not be long before he's treasonous to his country. And so we have lost in our world of humanistic philosophy and political correctness, we have lost the distinct connection between virtue and leadership. And so our problem with our leaders is not the leaders. Our problem with our leaders is with us.
I agree with you in everything you've said, but you haven't answered my question. What recourse have the people got other than vote them out of office?
The recourse is that they educate themselves on what the Constitution is, because most people don't even understand when the Constitution is being trampled on, and they look at the virtue of the people that they're elected. The recourse is you don't elect these people to begin with. And then when you do, you vote them out. But the problem is we are so disassociated and uninterested in our own elections that we don't take the time to know who the people are. So now we have an epidemic of people who are immoral and unqualified to be leaders, unqualified to do their job because they themselves don't know the Constitution.
Yeah. Go ahead, Aaron.
As a possible point to that, in the First Amendment, I think the one that the people forget that is there is to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a way for we the people to use that clause in the amendment to do something. Only I have yet to find anybody that knows how to do that.
Well, the petition for a redress of grievances is exactly what we do when it's supposed to be the way that we exert political control over our people. It's over our elected people. It's the way to show that we are a united front and that they need to change their opinions. The problem is that we're a day late and a dollar short. We are just now engaging in a process that we should have been engaged in for the last 100 years. We've allowed spoiled children to run the government for so long that now when the rod of correction has come along, they don't know what it looks like, and they're not afraid of it. So it's going to take a while for us to really get things back under control, and we have to engage in this in the manner in which our founders intended. We must be eternally vigilant. We must be electing people with virtue and moral standard, and we must be able to be the engaged citizen government that we are designed to be. Our founding fathers never intended for us to have elections for our senators that would allow us to go to sleep for 5 years and allow our senators to wake us up during election year, reinvent themselves, and tell us all the things that we want to hear when they tickle our ears. We know here in the state of Florida firsthand that in November of 2010, we elected people. We elected people who promised to run under conservative, you know, under a conservative ballot and hold to the Constitution and protect people's liberty, even as Tea Party candidates, and they haven't lived up to that. And since they haven't lived up to that, then we have to keep our promise and not let them come back in 2012. But it's going to take that. It's going to take us saying, you know, you get one shot and you're gone, and not saying, oh, well, you know, 2 years really isn't long enough. Maybe we should give them another chance and see what's going on. You know, that's not how it's supposed to be.
Yeah,
I'm very interested in to find out exactly what this petition to the government for redress of grievances, exactly what a group of people can do and how it's supposed to be done. Do you have any idea where we can go to find out exactly how to do that?
It's not an official process. It's not a process.
Okay, so,
it's not a legislated process. It's something that the people, it's a form of free speech. Basically, it means you're allowed to complain to your government for what they're doing wrong. It's a response to you looking through history. You had James the Second. Okay, James the Second starts invoking foreign law on the people. Starts trying to break up the Church of England, the Protestant Church of England. Five ministers get together to petition the king and say, look, we are not Italian. Do not force Roman law on us. We are not Catholic. Do not try to invoke Catholic canon on us. We are Protestant. And James II, what he did was he arrested them, he imprisoned them, and executed them for disagreeing with him. He passed this law called seditious libel that said anyone who disagreed with the king was to be put to death. And if you went on trial for seditious libel, if you were speaking the truth, it was no defense because it was absolutely forbidden to even contradict the king when he was wrong. So the right to redress your grievances is the right to complain about what's going on in your government. It's the right to
petition. Let me shoot that theory down for a second. Martin Luther King marched on Washington with a couple hundred thousand people. And he was able to get something accomplished, but it wasn't him marching on Washington. It was all of the riots. Now, the Tea Party marched on Washington to get their attention, over a million strong. It did no good.
That
has nothing to do with the right to redress your grievances. That exactly is your right to redress your grievances. The right to redress your grievances isn't the guarantee that you will be heard. The reason we are not being heard is because we've been asleep for 100 years and we've been able to be ignored for 100 years. These people don't listen to us because we haven't made them listen to us. We have no way to make them listen to us right now because of the way the process works. If we still had automatic recall, then they would have to listen to us. We wouldn't have fallen asleep for 100 years. But because we have to go through this election process and put our money where our mouth is, right, and say, you know, we really mean what we say, so you're really not going to get reelected, is why it's going to take a while. Marching on the government doesn't mean anything because I guarantee you, I've sat on airplanes next to
Republican, establishment Republican people. This one man, for instance, way up in the Republican Party. I don't know. God must have sat me on the plane next to him, because I don't know how I got on the plane next to him. And even just a few months ago, we were talking about political issues, and I had to really calm myself down, because this guy sat there and told me that, well, you know, the people that were irrelevant, you know, that it was a fluke what happened in November, and that the establishment Republicans are still not listening to us because they think it was a fluke. They really, really believe that the Tea Party will go away, that we'll just get tired of what we're doing, and we will allow the establishments to go back, the Bilderbergs and their crews to go back in creating the government that they've been creating. And, you know, we may just allow them to do that if we allow them to put another president in. So, but the point is, the rights exist as a responsibility to the people to use them. The reason the rights don't guarantee results now is because we haven't been using those rights for so long.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Very interesting. Paula, before we wrap it up here, do you have a question for Chris Ann?
Well, I don't know so much of a question, but to touch upon a couple of points that she had made, I mean, I'm aware that, you know, we don't know the Constitution because I don't feel it's being properly taught in our schools, but that's only my opinion, okay? You say we're a united front.
You know what? I don't want to interject with you, but it's not an opinion. It's a fact. We're teaching the Constitution in our schools, and if we allow Obama's race to the top to come into Florida, we will never teach our Constitution in our schools, because the race to the top's agenda is to teach our children that they are global citizens and that the Constitution of the United States is irrelevant. And so if you really believe in the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Florida, then we should tell Governor Scott that he should stop pushing to be competing for this race to the top garbage.
Yeah.
Agreed, agreed. So that being said, you know, you say we are united front, but it takes people such as yourself and the Lloyd Marcuses and the Steve Rosenblums and the Bella D'Angelos and the Tom Garcias to get the word out there and to let people know, you know, that things are happening. So that being said, why do you feel that we've been robbed of our history, and why do you feel liberty is being kept from the people?
Well, I'm not sure if I understand this question. Do you mean how do I feel it's been accomplished?
Yes.
Well, what's the purpose?
Okay.
I mean, I think the purpose is it's a matter of control.
It's been accomplished through the denying the people of our history. Because if we don't know our history, then we cannot know what our future is. We cannot know how to guard ourselves from these attacks on liberty, because if we don't remember, the reason that we have liberty is because people have fought for it for generations. Well, those fights have been over the same battles over and over and over again. Tyranny only has a certain bag of tricks, and the problem is we've identified those bags of tricks, but because we don't teach them, then we don't know what they look like, and we're able to repeat history again. You have to remember, only 30%, now I used to teach this in a different way, and then it occurred to me, only 30% of the people were in favor of the revolution, which meant 70% of the population was still loyal to the king and still enjoyed being controlled and being provided for by the king. Well, that means when we declared independence, you know, there was a small portion of the loyalists who went back to England, but a majority of them still stayed. So from the moment that we declared independence, there's been a large group of people who have been ever striving to get back to the king, because there are people who like to be provided for, people who do not like to have the ability to make decisions and have freedom and luxuries in that way. And so that's what we're battling against. When I tell people, Have you heard of, let me ask you, have you heard of the free love movement?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and everybody says, yeah, and they say, yeah, I heard about this, like the 1960s, right? And I say, no, how about the 1760s? In 1785, there's a woman by the name of Mary Wollstonecraft who wrote a book called The Fiction of Mary. And it started the free love movement, in which a group of people designed an organization whose philosophy was that marriage was the sole source of pain and of physical and psychological pain and suffering to the human race in 1785. And they have been since then been using eugenics and the destruction of the family to destroy this nation. John Dewey, you know, the Dewey Decimal System, is touted to be the father of modern education. The father of modern education is a self-proclaimed Marxist socialist who wanted to change the American society to become a Marxist socialist society, and did so by taking over the colleges that trained the teachers and wrote the textbooks, which is why we are where we are today. So the reason that we are under this assault is because liberty will always be assaulted, because liberty is a gift from God, and people hate God, and people hate liberty.
Yeah. Well, let me interject one thing here about what Benjamin Franklin said, and I think it'll give us a little bit of a clue. We have to take some responsibility for this. A friend of mine recently said, we get what we deserve. If this republic crumbles into some socialistic dictatorship, et cetera, we deserve it because we've allowed it. And it really goes back to what Benjamin Franklin warned about our republic in the beginning. He said, the natural inclination of mankind is a kingly government. And he said, the reason is because it creates the illusion, it gives the illusion to the masses of creating equality among the masses. And that's what we're all striving for. If we have a feel like we have a beneficent dictator like President Obama, who's really looking out for us and always tells us the truth, then we can just let him manage everything and do everything for us and tell us what to do, and we'll all be A-OK, and he'll spread the wealth. And that's what the masses are looking for, somebody to just handle all that for them. And that was Benjamin Franklin's take on the natural inclination of mankind and why we always degrade into some form of dictatorship, a monarchy, et cetera.
Well, because we're inherently lazy, and liberty takes work.
Yeah.
Liberty takes eternal vigilance, and it takes every person to be an engaged citizen. And we're inherently lazy. We can't help it. It's part of our nature.
Well, listen, Chrisanne, thank you so much for joining us on this Labor Day, and the rest of us will all go back to laboring tomorrow, I guess, although some of us labor today. But we really appreciate you being here. One more time for everybody out there, chrisannehall.com. Great book that she's written, Not a Living, Breathing Document, Reclaiming Our Constitution, and she's going to be at a lot of places. Check out her calendar on her website so you can maybe catch up with her. Well, the one last thing I want to say is on your Facebook page. You do have a Facebook page, I believe, but the people that have clicked, they like your website. Of the 8 people that they show as a little sample, I know 7 of them right off the bat. So I'm going to shout out at some people. And actually, in our chat room, Liberty Sun said we don't know who that is, Liberty Sun. We don't have an actual name. Said, Chrisanne, I had the opportunity to speak to you months ago. Keep up the good work. And so he was in our chat room talking up and chatting about what you had to say. But let's see.
If I can just ask people to just help me, you will really help me engage and keep going in this ministry, number one, if you pray for me. But number two, just get the word out and talk to friends and organizations and have me come speak and help us teach the people. I want to create more people that have my information, and I can only do that if I go and teach.
Well, that's awesome. So here we go with some of the people that I know. Of course, I'm not going to look at your whole page where there's 1,179 people that like this, but the 8 that I see, I recognize 6 of them. It's CeCe Cole, Clyde Fabretti, Kim Carroll, Patricia Strait, Cindy Cooper Yule, Ray Sanchez, and Harry Tsang. So as I'm looking at them, I'm like, wow, your webpage. I'm like, I know these people. I imagine if I go look at all of them, I would recognize a whole lot of them. But that's great. That's fantastic. Keep up the good work. And we appreciate having you on here. Happy Labor Day. And thanks for sharing that with us today, Chrisanne.
Thank you for having me. How quick 1 hour goes by, huh?
Yeah, it sure does. It flies when you're having fun. All right. I want to say one last thing to Chris Ann.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Well,
you'll
be happy to know that when I ran for Congress, my platform was the Constitution, and I started off my campaign in the early days saying, wouldn't it be nice if we had a way to fix all of our problems? Oh, wait, we do. It's a roadmap. It's a roadmap that has paved the way before for success. It's called the Constitution. And I know people thought I was nutty back then, but it's nice to see that so many people have come around to recognizing that we do have a roadmap for success if we would just follow it. So thanks for all your work, and have a great rest of the evening and a great week, Chris Ann. We'll see you at the convention in November.
All right. Sounds great.
Bye-bye. Take care. All right, well, that was fun. I knew it was going to be fun, especially, and you guys know, anytime we get somebody on here to talk about the Constitution, I'm just tickled pink, so that was fun. And
I
she's
didn't
got
know
great
you were
insight.
Interested in the Constitution.
You didn't know that? Oh, okay.
No.
It's a secret passion of mine. So anyway, well, I'm going to let everybody else go now. We've had a great time. We'll be back in there. Who do we have on for Wednesday, Dick?
You had to ask me that, didn't you? And I haven't got my calendar in front of me. Oh, boy. Yes, I do. Give me one second.
I should know this, too, but, you know, like I said.
Rhonda.
Rhonda, that's right. Okay, talk about what's going on in schools and like this race to the top that Chris Ann just talked about. I'm sure we'll get to talk about that and what the specifics are behind all of that. But so we'll be back here on Wednesday, and we'd like to thank everybody for joining us today. Paula, we'll give you, as usual, the final word.
Just a quick shout-out to our troops serving overseas. We thank you very much for serving our country overseas. Your families love you and miss you and want you home real soon. We hold our troops in our loving hands, and we ask the Lord to protect them as they protect us and bless them and their families for the selfless acts that they perform for us in our time of need.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. Amen. Dick Ann, thank you for your patriotism. Thank you for joining us. Paula, thanks for making it here tonight with us. And everybody else out there, we will see you all again on Wednesday. Take care.
You have a good night.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.